And welcome back to Success Made to Last. I'm Rick Tocchini. This is our Best Version America series. Our special returning guest is Bill Halamandaris. He was personally mentored by Viktor Frankl, author of Man's Search for Meaning. Bill is the co-founder and chairman of the Heart of America Foundation and four other nonprofit organizations. A veteran of Capitol Hill, where he served as staff director of Senate oversight committees, Bill is going to talk to us today about Best Version America. Bill, welcome back to our show.
Thank you, Rick. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Bill, for those that have not heard about you or your relationship with the one and only Viktor Frankl, share that with our audience.
Well, the relationship that I had with Viktor was the most important personal relationship in my life in terms of my growth and my development. I often call him my philosophical father, as he helped to shape and define the way we behave. And, you know, the relationship began very simply when I wrote him a fan letter. I had been struggling coming out of Vietnam. I was troubled and, like a lot of veterans of that war, wondering what it was all about and what I was going to do with my life, and despondent. And in that mindset, I came across a copy of Man's Search for Meaning, and it connected with me immediately. So out of who knows what impulse, I wrote him a letter and told him how important that book was to me, how meaningful I found it to be, and how much I appreciated his voice. And to my surprise, he answered my letter. Mm-hmm. And he answered it in such a way that it required me to respond. And thereby, he set up a dialogue between us. And I realized after an exchange of half a dozen letters that that he was really trying to guide me and teach me and help me through, you know, the crisis that I was in. And this continued for a period of almost 2 years before I found a way to invite him to Washington to speak at a conference that I was leading. And while he was here, we established a more personal connection. He invited me up to his suite after he had made his presentation and talked to me for the better part of the day. And then when he went home, he started sending me copies of things that he was writing, asking me to give me an opinion and tell him what I thought. And, of course, ego is such that I thought that my opinion was all that precious, that Viktor Frankl would want to hear from me. And finally, I realized it was just one more way of continuing his dialogue. And it advanced from there to the point where every time he was in the United States, he would call me ahead of time and say, I'm going to be in Los Angeles, or I'm going to be in Chicago. Can you find maybe some time to come up and visit with me? And, of course, I never missed an opportunity. He taught, of course, that life is all about choice. And he would say it's, you know, our responsibility. And he would break that down into two words. He would say, responsibility, what are you going to do? How are you going to respond to the situations that life presents you with? And, of course, that leads into the essay that I wrote for today. And curiously, to set it up, Rick, at one point, you know, we were talking about the Holocaust, and I was asking him why he went back to Vienna. And it was his want. He challenged me on that. And I said, why? Do you think there's something different and terrible about the Germans? You think maybe that couldn't happen here? You know, what happened there could happen anywhere. He said, you know, that same place that you consider to be so undesirable also housed people who risked their lives to save relatives of mine, people who sheltered me and helped me get reestablished when I came back. He said it was all about the choices that were made and the leadership that they had. What happened there could happen anywhere. And that, of course, is the truth. We're all the same. Whether we're here or we're there, we all have the same choices to make. Much of it relates to the way we treat each other and whether we can get past the drives of our ego and our separateness and realize that we're looking at a brother or sister everywhere we go with everything we do.
And your most recent commentary is right in line with that, talking about the enemy, talking about divisiveness, and talking about, on the flip side, the harmony. Share the most recent commentary.
I will, you know, I was a little reluctant to say what I said at first, and then I got into it, and I realized it was what I had to be saying. And part of my reluctance is that I had to admit that I was afraid. Mm-hmm. And I am afraid. Not for my personal security. I'm too old and I've been too close to the edge too many times to worry about that. I fear for my country, the country, as you mentioned, I've served my entire life every way I can. The United States Senate for 20 years in the military during Vietnam, and the community through various charities I helped create. I worry about the world our children will inherit. My concern comes from watching what's happening around us, the daily drumbeat of disasters on the news, and thinking about them in the context of the lessons I learned from two survivors of the Holocaust, Viktor Frankl, author of Man's Search for Meaning, and Henry Landworth, founder of Give Kids the World. Both Viktor and Henry warned privately and publicly another Holocaust was always possible. They spent much of the last half of their lives telling us to be vigilant, lest it happen again. At that time, I didn't see how that could happen. It is now increasingly clear we ignore that possibility at our peril. Gregory Stanton, the founder of Genocide Watch, has identified the stages that can cause otherwise decent people to commit murder. He says it starts when one group of people defines another as the other. They are said to threaten our interests. Discrimination and dehumanization follow, eroding the in-group's empathy for the other group. This leads to increased polarization and the belief that you are either with us or against us. Then true believers to demonstrate their commitment. Enemies are identified. Leaders of the opposition are targeted. Death lists are made. Weapons are stockpiled. Physical segregation is enforced. We don't want to live anywhere near them, the in-group says. The out-group is forced into ghettos or concentration camps. There they are easily targeted, and the massacres and mass murders can begin. History shows many of the perpetrators of these atrocities have no remorse, not because they're incapable of feeling it, but because they find ways to rationalize it. Bob McCauley, founder of America, has helped me understand this point years ago when he talked about the genocide in Rwanda. He described some of the horrible atrocities America cares had witnessed, including Hutu men chopping up the children in their villages with machetes. When I asked how they could possibly do such a thing to children they undoubtedly knew, he said they rationalized it by saying they had no choice. It was necessary to keep my people safe, one man said. Those children would have grown up to come back and kill us. We are not there at the moment, but we are not far from there. You can see it bubbling up on the streets, seeping up through the sidewalks, and the great undercurrents and tides of hate flowing back and forth just below the surface. Let me be clear. This is not about one side or the other. For those who may think I'm talking to the left or the right, get over it. A reaction of that nature is just one more manifestation of how divided we have become. It is not about us or them. It is about us. No one is exempt. We all have to recognize our responsibility for the world we're living in. No one has said it more clearly than the cartoon philosopher Pogo. "We have met the enemy," he said, "and he is us." Take a moment and consider that. Have you ever seen our society so polarized? Have you lost friends for political reasons? Are the people you used to talk to that you now avoid? When your family and friends gather, are there places you just don't go? Do you get your information from a single source, or can you switch channels back and forth without getting aggravated by what you hear? It's hard to tell whether the acrimony we see in our political system is a cause or an effect. What is clear is that each side of the political divide believes the other side is evil. Both sides see the coming election as existential. Neither side believes it can live with the other side's success. If the election is close, neither side will accept the outcome without question. Inevitably, in that case, the divide will become larger and deeper. This is the recipe for disaster. It will take us to a dark place, the likes of which we have never seen in our country's history. But there is a light out of this darkness. It begins with the recognition that we have a choice, that America is more bottom-up than top-down, and that this country will be whatever we are. The responsibility is ours, not theirs. The solution to all the problems on the national level starts locally, on the personal level, with our love for each other, the acceptance of those with different views, and our denial of the forces that would separate and divide us from one another. As a child, I often wondered where hell was. Later, I learned the word hell comes from the Old English. Literally, it means to separate or to build a wall around. To be held was to be shut off. Interestingly enough, diabolic comes from the word meaning to divide. Diabolic forces separate us from each other and God. In our lives, they find expression in ego, anger, pride, radical religions, nationalism, racism, envy, ignorance, and greed. These are the forces of darkness. They divide and conquer. By contrast, heaven means harmony. If divine forces divide, love unites. Peace will not come. We will not see the best of America until we're able to get beyond the superficial elements that divide us. Our society will not heal until we realize the only thing that separates us from each other is the belief that we are separate. The answer lies in the distance between saying, "I am my brother's keeper," and saying, "I am my brother."
Bill, I think without a doubt, this is one of your singular, most powerful editorials on our country. And if you were to give us the prescription for healing today, let's say post-COVID-19, what's in that magic potion for all Americans to try to unite and become harmonious again?
Well, I think it starts with realizing that ego is the enemy. We all get locked into ourselves and believe that we are right, that we have the answer, that we know more than others. So a good dose of humility would be an appropriate place to start. And perhaps as a first step, reaching out to those who are closest to us that maybe we have felt have gone astray, to have those conversations that we have avoided. And to do so with an open heart, to do so, without being judgmental, to realize that we are talking to somebody whose life is just as precious as ours, who's no less a child of God than we are. And to realize that if we cannot get past these divides and accept each other for who we are, there's no way our relationships will heal. And if our relationships don't heal, there's no way that our country and our society will heal. And at that point, we are in a really, really dark place. you know, we don't find a way to turn this away, frankly, I fear for the future of our society and the existence of our democracy, no less.
I look at your commentary today, and I'm trying to find role models that are out there, and the one that comes to mind first is Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Judge Scalero, who, despite all their differences, were good friends and civil about their disagreements on the Constitution. Tell us your opinion on that relationship and how it may apply to healing our nation.
Well, again, that's a wonderful example. And, you know, it happened, I think, because of their differences as much as in spite of them. What you had were two people of towering intellect who came at the world from vastly different directions, but they respected that intellect in each other, and they never questioned each other's motives. You know, when I came to Washington, you know, the version of that I remember and I often tell people about was the relationship between Barry Goldwater and Hubert Humphrey. And for those of you old enough to remember Barry Goldwater, he was the gold standard for the conservative movement for many years. You could not be further to the right than Barry was. And Humphrey was the standard bearer for the liberal wing of the Democratic Party. He was the most liberal element of the Democratic Party at that time. And you know, they argued about everything. You know, I used to go watch them on the Senate floor when I was there as a kid in school and working on the Hill. And they went at each other tooth and nail. And yet they were able to walk away from that. The argument was always about the means to the end, never the end. They always talked about each other in terms of respectful. They always listened to each other. And then more often than not, they would go out and have lunch together, or their families would get together and have dinner together, and you know, their relationships were close. And it was the same relationship, frankly, that John McCain had with Senator Biden. You wouldn't think that they would be good friends, but they were. And it comes from that respect, you know, deep down of who the other person is, and to realize that we have no right to demonize somebody just because we disagree with them.
That is a great example. And so here we are, approaching November's election 2020, and America has a commentary and a challenge to Americans to go vote.
Yeah, that's the first responsibility we have, and the primary responsibility we have. And we always talk about these national problems and national concerns that we have, and we forget that the power is always with us, whether it's in healing personal relationships or affecting the direction of our country. You know, if you want something to happen, do something about it. First and foremost, vote, contribute to the dialogue, and let people know what you think.
Well said, sir. Optimistically, I believe America can return to its best version. And 2020 has really been a strange nexus point. Strange pandemic, riots, questionable leadership. Strange is the most polite word I can conjure up.
I was just going to say, Rick, you know, from my perspective, and you're absolutely right about how strange this year has been. But if you look at it from Viktor Frankl's perspective, all of those things you're talking about are questions we're being asked. And your future will be defined by how we respond to them. You know, they are crises, but they're opportunities to make our society better, to do better and to be better and to grow and to fully come together, perhaps in a way that we never were before. You know, if there's an optimistic note that I have, it's largely because I lived through the Vietnam experience. And that was as far apart as I've ever seen our society, and as close to where we now are as I can recall. So there is hope, but it is going to come down to us, and and the decisions that we make in terms of our lives going forward.
Well, that's right. Hey, Bill, thank you so much. We need to have you on next month again for our election coverage. And we dearly appreciate your thought leadership and love you, man.
Thank you, Rick. It's always my pleasure.
That was Bill Halamandaris. Just a great voice. Personally mentored by Viktor Frankl, probably one of the best known authors and philosophers of our time, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning. We appreciate Bill. We appreciate his thought leadership, and we hope that what he says rings true so our country can heal again. I'm Rick Tocchini. Thanks for joining us on Success Made to Last. And as we always say, may you live the best version of you. Have a great week.
So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban.marasini@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program.